At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairman to meet at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting. A 1 year continuous sobriety attendance at a group conscious meeting. My name's Brian. I'm an alcoholic. I've done both of those, and over the last year, my second year in sobriety, I've done a lot of growing. I'm getting my children back in my life, and my life is getting immensely better day by day. It has nothing to do with me. I did some work that's required called the 12 Steps. I worked with my sponsor and did what I was supposed to do and didn't drink in the meantime. And that's the results that God gave me. It has nothing to do with me, and I'm glad to be here, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you for letting me chair this month, and happy anniversary to anybody who's celebrating this month. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your cell phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. Now, tonight's speaker, I'm going to introduce him, but first I had to ask somebody else to speak, and they had backed out on Wednesday, and I was outside when they backed out, because they had other obligations which he had to meet, which is okay, you know. Me and my sponsor sort of went into a half a second of panic mode, and I remember this wasn't really about me. It's about you. It's about God, and it has nothing to do with me. And when I gave it up to God, the first person that came into my mind is the gentleman going to share tonight. I've seen him over the last 2 years, and he's gone through some stuff, and he stayed sober. And I've heard some stories about him being a wild man, so I really wanted to hear what he has to say, because he really seems to be in the solution and doing this deal. And I hope it helps somebody in this room, because it already helped me that he said yes to me, and I'm honored. I'm going to introduce you guys to Bob B.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
I was sitting in a restaurant before I came up here, and I was going to, you know, say a little prayer, what some of the things I wanted to say, and make sure I don't get, you know, try to come out right. I haven't spoken a little while, and a little bit nervous, so bear with me, and I'll try to get us in, get us out, get drunk, get undrunk pretty quick. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with, actually, you know what? Phil Oakley is one of the guys that, when I got sober, was coming around this club, and he had been coming to this club, and he got sober in July of 1970, and he used to say his sobriety date, and he used to say his last name. He died a few years ago, and one of the things that he used to say to me, to a lot of people, but one of the things that I used to hear him say all the time, were, bring your dreams to Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter what they are, your drunk dreams, your sober dreams, bring them to this program. And go over them on occasion after you've been sober a little while, so you don't sell yourself short. And let me tell you something. This dream right here, right now, me standing up here in front of you guys, I could have never, ever in a million years imagined something like this. So, thank you for my sobriety, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. And I'd like to start over, because I usually say, my name is Bob Bingham, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober since June of 92 by the grace of God in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came up here, you know, I had all these big plans while I'm sitting there listening to you reading how it works and what I was going to say. Of course, I didn't say none of them. sobriety is absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm not always the best example of an alcoholic in recovery. I'm not always the best example of working the steps. It's taken a long time for me to get sober. I started coming here in 1983, May of 83. My first treatment center was in my first treatment center was in 1978 in California, and I was in the military. So it's been a little bit of a road trying to get sober. And I'll say this, and I guess we'll get on to what it was like. When I came here in 83, I met a lady in Mako. Her name was Jeannie Roberts. And Jeannie said to me, because I was a mess, like 99.9% of the time back in them days, I was a mess. And she said that people that have a hard time getting sober, when they finally get it, they get it. And they hang on to it, and they don't let it go because it's taken them so long to get it. I'll never forget her saying that. I stayed sober for a little while then, about 11 months, maybe 11 and a half months, and went back out and went back out and went back out. And but that little saying has been really helpful for me and, you know, in my sobriety now, because you know what? Like I said, I haven't popped no pills, smoked no dope, shot no dope, done, you know, since 1992. And I tell you, for this curb climbing, commode hugging drunk, it's a miracle. A lot of times I'll be in the meeting, I may not be the most spiritual person in the meeting, I may not be, you know, I still use profanity probably, and a lot of times I'm not supposed to. I do a lot of things that I probably don't, you know, but there's one constant in my life, and that's my sobriety. So no matter what you hear tonight, if you hear anything at all, hear this. I love my sobriety with every fiber of my being. I don't ever want to lose it. I don't care anything. You know, that's everything to me is my sobriety. And I don't, you know, I can't say that enough. My little sister's here, Stephanie. And you know what? She's here to keep me honest, probably. I didn't really think she would come when I invited her. Although I'm just thrilled to death to have her here, and I love her to death, and thank you very much for being here. You know, I started drinking as a teenager and grew up in the Northwest area of Chicago. And I remember somewhere around the 6th or 7th grade with a couple of buddies getting like a case of quarts of beers, you know, and like there was 12 quarts in a case or whatever. And I remember going to this little rich girl's party or something like that, and I drank, and I remember being really drunk. I remember on and off, bouncing off walls, and this was, you know, like I said, 6th, 7th grade, I'm not quite sure. And the next day, a couple of my buddies told me that, you know, you only drank this much, and you were falling all over the place, and I didn't know it at the time, but as I got sober, and I remembered, and I went through steps, and, you know, I think I spent the rest of my drinking career proving to everybody that I can drink, like, you know, whoever. I could drink a hell of a lot more than that, that's for sure. And that's what I did. It seemed like I was off and running from day one. I was alcoholic. I smoked the other, you know, extracurricular activities, shall we say. This is an AA meeting, and I am an alcoholic. Other things we did along with the alcohol, of course, I guess. Probably one or two of you have done that, right? From the beginning, I was a scared little boy trying to run away from himself and trying to be a part of and be, you know, I was the oldest in my family. It was me, my two sisters, and my brother, basically. I have an older sister that lives down here that wasn't living with us as we were growing up, but I was kind of the oldest, and people looked at me as the direction, which is a damn shame, but, you know, but I was drunk. And, of course, growing, you know, 14 through 17, 18, I wasn't drunk all the time, obviously. I drank on the weekends, and if I could get away with it during the week sometimes with my buddies, that we would do that. But from that point on, it was like the most important thing to me. It was like I couldn't wait to get out of the house and go do that. Well, we're going to go do something with the family. Yeah, you know, I'd rather be over here drinking and doing that. So it seems like from the very beginning, drinking started taking things from me because it took the relationship with my family away. And I say that I come from a dysfunctional family. And the only reason I say that is because I'm the dysfunctional one, and I'm in that family. So that made it dysfunctional. Sure, we all have our things, but this is about, you know. So going through the teenage years and that, and drinking and not finishing high school because I was drunk, because I was wanting to smoke, and I was wanting to use, and I was wanting to drink, and I didn't care about doing that. I wanted to, whatever. I wanted to have the immediate gratification to get high and escape. And what in the world would a 14, 15, 16-year-old boy want or need to escape from is beyond me, looking back. But at that time, it was everything, and I needed to do it, and I did it. And 17 came and had an opportunity to join the Marine Corps. wasn't the first opportunity. The first was Army, and they sent me over to the Navy, and the Navy sent me over to the Air Force. The Air Force, you know, one of those. Yeah, we'll take the son of a bitch. Come on, bring him in here, Christ. We'll kick him in the ass. So they took me. We'll shape him up. And they did. And it was amazing. Amazing. The Marine. The United States Marine. And I was thrilled. I wanted to be, you know, everything. I wanted to go to Okinawa. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. And I wanted to... I couldn't wait. You know, it was great. And I started drinking. Mm-hmm. Started drinking. All of a sudden, Okinawa, crazy. Who the hell wants to go there? You know? Iron your clothes. You know, I don't want to do that shit. And I didn't. And I slowly, over the course of my 4-year obligation, turned into 2 years and 7 months. Because I didn't have time. I wanted to drink. I wanted to stay high. That's more important. Luckily, I got, I was discharged generally under honorable conditions, and that was wonderful. They did that. I didn't really have a lot of problems, except I couldn't stay sober. And, that was my first, introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the military, having a military driver's license is kind of unique. So when you have one, they ask you to drive for them and do different things. And it's kind of a, like I said, it's a little bit unique. So I was in this treatment center. This was April of 78. And it was a 6-week ARS thing in the Navy, and the Navy owned it, whatever. And the first week or so, you know, I'm in there, and I'm going to, all right, I'm going to get with it. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to learn. I'm going to do it. You know, Bill Hulkley used to say, I'm going to mention this guy's name a few times. You know what? And when I do, and if I misquote him and everything, please, please forgive me, because I'm not here to misquote that man. And you know what? He gave me my medallion. 1 year, he gave me my medallion, my first medallion. I mean, I cried like a little schoolgirl, and I goddamn, you know what? He gave it to me. He said, here, him and Alverna gave me my, so, you know, they were there in the beginning, and so when I mentioned it, you know, it means a lot, but he said, he used to say things like, we're like 3-inning guys, you know, we get to the thing and we're all gung-ho for the first 3 innings of the game, but after that shit, you know, 4th inning comes along and I'm passed out with a beer. I'm done. You know, I get motivated for 3 innings and that's it. So the first week of this treatment center, I'm gung-ho about it a little bit and stuff. And they asked me and another man to drive the vans. There was about 40 of us in treatment. And I took the van. I drove to the meeting and he drove to the meeting. And over the course of about 4 or 5 days, people started changing. Certain people would go in this guy's van and certain people would go in my van. And my van would end up at the drug dealer's house on the way to the meetings. And we'd all get so high we didn't even know what day it was. And then we'd go to the meetings. And meetings in California back in the late 70s were interesting, to say the least. I've been to meetings where you sit around in a circle and the chairperson does an out-of-body experience and he goes around and touches people and asks us if we could, you know. And that was kind of neat because I was so high. I'm like, wow, this is going to be awesome, dude. Like, holy shit. People actually, wow. And I didn't know any better. I mean, I did, but I didn't. And the reason that I wasn't drinking was because we were taking Anabuse. And at the time, I say, I wasn't afraid of it yet. Oh, there came a time when, I mean, I was still afraid of it. I was scared to death of it, you know, because I believed what they told me. Did not drink on that stuff because it'll mess you up. And I believed them. And so needless to say, the 6 weeks of ARS treatment really didn't do a whole lot. And I got out of treatment in, I think it was the end of April, early May of that year. In June, I was out. And I wanted to finish high school. I wanted to be a Marine. I wanted to go places and do things. I started out really with the best of intentions, you know, and I drank, and then everything went to hell. Didn't matter. It didn't care. Whether you were my wife, my mom, my sister, my brother, it didn't matter. All I wanted was that next drink and that next high and that next whatever. So, getting out, Came back to Chicago. That's what we do, right? We're drunk. We go back home where people are going to take care of us. Nobody was taking care of me out there anymore. They were done with me. Get this guy out of here. Come back home. Which reminds me, I'm going to break for a real second here and tell. My dad was an alcoholic. And I really, I mean, you know this thing growing up, whatever. But when I got sober, I really should have realized he was an alcoholic way before I realized it, because he has this really nice little family living out in Santa Barbara, right, on the coast. He moved us in 1963, something like that, 64. He moved us from the coast to Cleveland, Ohio, the armpit of America, you know. So I found out that Dad's family's from there. So, oh, no shit. He got in trouble out there, wore his hook out, went back home, took us with him. Son of a bitch. Would have been nice to live out there for a little while, huh? So I went back home after the Marine Corps, you know, following my dad's footsteps. Didn't know I was following him. He died when I was 13, by the way, and my mom had remarried to a guy that really loved her, took care of her, wasn't an alcoholic. And his name was Bob, and we called him Uncle Bob. And he took her in with the four kids and, well, the three kids and me. You know, I was 14, and I, you know, me. So I came back home, got this hair thing going on, this beard thing, and I'm just looking raggedy as I could possibly look. And everybody's helping me. Mom's helping me. Dad's helping me. And I'm going through the whiskey bottles and the drinking, and my sister's helping me. I used to leave my sister notes. I'd take some of her money out of her drawers and leave little IOUs. She'd go to get her money to be an IOU from me. I'd justify it by saying, I'm like, you know, I left you an IOU. It's kind of comical now, but, you know, we're some sorry, it's good though. It's a good, you know, thank God for the promises, especially the one that says, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door. Thank God we're able to look back at some of our stuff and laugh. When I first got here, and during the first few years of trying to get here, I couldn't share this kind of stuff with you because I would cry, because I was still like that. When you're still like that, like, who dreams of being rigorously honest and tolerant like it talks about in that Step 1 book? No, the average alcoholic still drinking can't dream of this. I couldn't. And now I, you know, and I'm probably quoting that thing. I'm probably tearing up them quotes in there. So please don't go, that's not what it says. It says this. I know. Sorry. I'm telling you I'm sorry now because I'm going to misquote some more shit before tonight's out. So everybody's helping me and I'm drinking and I'm drugging and I can't get sober and it's not that I can't. It's that I can't. It's page 34 says it. The baffling part of alcoholism is the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. That's my story. That's my drink. I couldn't leave it alone. I remember standing out in front of my house in Winter Park on Minnesota and Balch, looking up at the sky, cussing God out, saying, all I want to do is not drink. Can't you just take that away from me? And then I'd walk in the house, get a little beer, and I'd say, see, doesn't even work. You guys taught me about faith without works is dead. I didn't realize. I thought it would just happen. But we had to do something. We have to at least do the footwork. Pray, ask guidance, and then do the footwork. March forward, right, Angel? We have to do that. And I didn't know that. I thought it would just, you know, happen, but it didn't. And thank God that it doesn't, I think. I don't know if I would be as secure, that's not really the right word, but as wrapped up in my sobriety as I am. Because, you know, I just so utterly grateful that I don't feel the need to go drink or the need to go, you know, I don't have that today. I have a little bit of nervousness being up in front of you guys. But don't worry, it's going away. You guys will be going, get that son of a bitch out of here in a minute. About 10 after 9, you'll be throwing me off the thing. Once we start talking about ourselves, we can't stop. You know how that goes, right? But so I go into another treatment center in Election Brothers, I think I went in and like, is it 81? I'm not sure of the year, maybe the summer. And they put me in a locked ward for like 14 days before I went to the treatment. And I was sharing this with my friend the other day that there was a woman in there, and she would walk around talking about the jig is up, the jig is up, the jig is up, and can't, you know, and what's her deal? But she would get these moments of clarity, and she would sit down and she would have a conversation with you and talk about things for, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, I don't know how long, and then she'd forget all about them and go on, and she'd be back with the jig is up thing. And if she got the moment of clarity again, she might not have no idea that she ever had it before with you. She had a moment of clarity with me one time, and another fellow was sitting at a table, and she says, so you're telling me that all you have to do is not drink and you wouldn't be here? Because that doesn't make sense. She goes, I've got this thing that I lose my memory for days, months, weeks on end, and I go off the deep end. And she goes, I kind of understand why I'm here, but you, all you need, why don't you just quit drinking? I go, well, I don't know. Thanks for that, you know. Shit, Christ. I wish it was, you know. And then she went off, and that, you know, that was the only time I ever had a conversation with her. And I'm not even sure that I had that conversation with her. I'm not sure if it was me, her friend, or whoever. But she had that, you know, and that was in 1981. And I still remember it like it was because she said that. And I was like, wow, why don't I? Why don't I just quit drinking? What's the problem here? And, but I didn't. I got out. I drank. And this time, I got to experience that lovely feeling of drinking on antabuse. Wow. It's horrible. Horrible. It makes you want to wish, it made me want to be dead. I mean, I was throwing up. I was uncontrollable. I had the worst headache in the world. I was sick. I was this. But you know what's really, you know what's crazy? Because I knew that was going to happen before I drank. I knew that. They told me. And I believed them because I didn't drink the whole time I was in ARS. 2 years earlier, 3 years earlier, whatever it was. But yet here I am drinking now, sitting in that alley, drunk. Drunk as Tudor Brown. I'm sitting in the bar, right, drinking. And I'm feeling this. I'm feeling the antabuse kicking in going, wow, that feels pretty cool. What is that? And that's the blood rushing to your head before you get this damn headache that's ready to blow your head off like that. And I'm thinking, and at that point, as soon as that happened, I'm done. I'm in the alley. I'm all over. I'm just, it was horrible. It's absolutely, positively horrible. And I never want to experience that, and I never want to see anybody else experience it. It's just, so, but I didn't stop drinking, of course. You know, so, I still had another place to do, some more things to do, and I finally got out of the Chicagoland area and ended up down here in 1983 and met a man named Mike Murray. I don't know if you remember. A lot of you guys may or may not know Mike. And we actually came here the same day on a Sunday night in May of 83. I think it was May 13th or I want to say it was May 13th. I think that was my first sobriety date here. And it was at the house next door. And that's when I met you guys. You guys are there waiting for me. And come on in, mister. And I did. And you welcomed me in with open arms. And I stayed sober for a little while. And I went back out drinking after 11 months. And I went to the Dom, you know. I went to Mako before that because I met Jeannie. And then I went to the thing and yeah. So I came here and you know what? I think I went to Mako. Yeah, I did. In fact, because Tom B. was my sponsor. She doesn't use his last name in meetings, so I'm not going to use it out of respect for him. I still think we can be a little too anonymity when we don't, you know. Because when you go to visit somewhere in the hospital and you ask for, where's Bicycle Bob's room? They don't know him by that, you know. So, or where's that guy that everybody calls Mister? You know that guy. Who the hell's that? So, I've always been not a real close to God and stuff like that. But you guys have always tolerated me, and you always keep telling me it'll happen. That's God. That's God. That's God. That's God. So you know what? It's maybe slowly but surely gonna, you know, kick in there. Just, I'm gonna try to keep my mind open, you know, and try to follow the right dictates of our higher. The book says it. Dictates of our higher power, right? The book says, you know, Jack is my sponsor. He got sober in February of 1975, and it took him 10 years to get sober, and I really identify with a lot of things he says. And one of the things that really pisses me off that he showed me in the big book, because I was talking about how, you know, sobriety's enough. I just need to be sober, dude. That's all. Sobriety's enough. And he pointed out, and he read it to me about how we think an alcoholic who says sobriety is enough is unthinking. Talking about, who says that? He says, well, you said you believe the big book. I said, I do. Shit. So I read that on occasion. I still say it on occasion. And I remember, as soon as I say it, I know I'm, well, you know what. But to say that and to qualify it would be... I'm going to try to qualify that statement in a way that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt from trying this thing that I can't stay sober without Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. No ifs, ands, buts at all, period. So if I say I can stay, if sobriety is enough, knowing that I can't stay sober without AA, the problem, it's not really a problem, it's wonderful, actually. When you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and start working the steps, you can't stay miserable. You can't stay unhappy. You can't stay, not if you're working, I can't stay unhappy. I haven't been unhappy. I've been pretty damn miserable sometimes, but I haven't been wanting close, you know, drinking. And so, knowing that and coming here and you guys giving me a hug and saying it's going to be okay makes it better. So in other words, so by saying that sobriety is enough and not knowing that I can't go stay sober without AA, and then with AA, you got, it gets better regardless, in spite of ourselves. And I don't know what the hell I just said, but kind of, you know, somebody would be proud of me trying to justify something. So I'm going through the, I'm down here and I'm coming to the meetings and I'm getting, lots of people were here then, and Mary and Chet were one of them, and Gypsy and Marion and Raymond, and, you know, Obie, of course, you know, watching me get over 33rd Street, my home away from home, my little vacation site down there in the, my little work farm. I used to work, I'd help build it, then I'd get arrested, go inside and watch them build. Damn it, how'd that happen? Oh yeah, I got drunk last night. For me, for the last 18 years, I've not been arrested. So that tells me one thing, that drinking and being arrested have a lot in common for me. I'm grateful that I haven't been arrested. Thank you. I actually got stopped in Atlanta, not in Atlanta, Georgia, in 95. And I thought they gave me a field sobriety test, and I said, you know, I'm sober like 10 years, a little more. And I still got this, you know, attitude of, I'll show you, I'll hurt me. I get out of the car, and I'm like, why do you guys want to give me that? Why don't you just take me to jail? Nobody ever passed these damn things. That's what I'm saying to these guys. They ain't say nothing to me except, we'd like to step out of the car, please, we'll give you a field sobriety, you know, and I'm really in a total smartass to these guys. But they took it in stride, they, you know, and they gave me the pills and everything, and they let me go. And so, and the guy says, you know, I guess you're the first one, huh? I guess so. Go get some sleep, he says, because I was really super tired. And he says, go get some sleep. And I said, all right, I will. And I pulled off, and I did. I do follow directions when the law tells me to these days. That's the one thing that yes sir, no sir. I'm not afraid to tell you right now that I yes sir them and no sir them. And no ma'am, yes ma'am. Because I like being out here versus being in there. Coming here for 83, drinking, not drinking, and in and out, and in and out, is really, really screws up your drinking. It sucks. I was in the FBI. There used to be a bar called the FBI over on Fairbanks. Anybody familiar with that place? I was getting hammered, just really having a good time, you know. Spending all my money, getting ready to give up my apartment, just having a hell of a good time. And I feel this tap on my back, you know. Turn around and there's this guy, Joe Kelly. He mentions his last name all the time, so I don't have a big problem saying it. He's got about 15 people with him from here. What's going on? They're in there. They're going to play some pool and have a good time, a big sober thing. I'm shit-faced. I don't even know what day it is. I'm like, oh, Christ. You want to come over and say hi? Yeah, that's what I want to do. I couldn't even, I crawled out of that place. I probably could have walked under the door. You know what I mean? Oh, I felt. But that's what happens to us. It screws your drinking up big time. Another time I was over at a place called Burton's over here off of Summerlin. And again, I was in there trying to get rid of my paycheck just as fast as I possibly could before I you know, would start paying any bills. I wanted to spend that son of a bitch. So I was doing that pretty good. And the woman that I was lived with had called my sponsor. So he came up there. And I saw him. He walked in. And some of you may know him. He went by the name of Happy Carl. He never used his last name, so I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to do that. But came in and, what are you doing here? Well, Jan called me up and thought you might want to talk. And I said, well, let's see. Got about 75, about 80 bucks left in my pocket. Not getting arrested. No, I don't think I got nothing to say to you. See you later. Have fun. Call me if you need me. So he left. And I commenced to do what we do best. You know, throw everything good in our life away. That's what I do best. Or I did best. Somewhere between 19... No, there's a lot of stuff that I'm not... I mean, I'm just not going to get into it. I forget. And the marriages and the ins and outs and the beautiful people that have been in my life throughout my life. My wives. The first two wives were...
Fuck them.
No. The third wife was the most wonderful woman. Stuck by me from hell or high water to the end. We separated and ended up marrying another woman, and she actually got sober in, I met her up in Charleston, South Carolina. She got sober in September 11th, 1993. So she was really pissed when that guy took over her date in 2001. Took her, balloon away. She didn't like that. And I don't blame her. Her name was Ray, and she was my fourth wife, and she died with cancer last year. And every once in a while, everybody meets that one, you know what I mean? And that was that one, you know, and I walked into that clubhouse and I said, you know, who the hell is that? And you know, that was the end. There was nothing. I mean, that was it. I knew that was, it was us, and it was. So there was a lot of things that I didn't get to share and I didn't, you know, that I haven't, but it's not because I don't want to. It's just because I'm nervous as heck and I'm trying to keep this thing going, and, you know, I don't crash and burn yet. I will in a minute or two, but not yet. And so it's important to get sober, too. I haven't got sober yet, and I've only got a few minutes left. I got to get sober here. Let me get sober. All right. You know, I get on my knees every single morning and ask God to keep me sober. First thing I do is I get right on my knees and say, God, please keep me sober and help me to treat other people and do your will, not mine. And if there's anything I can do out there to help someone else see this, I'll do it. Every single morning. I got this little drawing on my dresser. It's this drawing of this guy with a baseball cap on. He's sitting in a chair. He's got his Converse on. He's got his head down. He's got a cigarette in his left hand. He's got a beer can in his right hand, in a bag, of course, because we don't want no one to know what we're doing. I think that's so goddamn cool. Get a beer, put it in a bag so no one knows what it is. Walking down the street, homeless and shit, got a beer down the ear, no one knows what I'm doing. But we do that. I did it. And so I look at this little picture of that man sitting in that chair with his Converse on and his cigarette in his left hand and the beer can in his right and his head like this. And I go, and on the bottom it says, remember, we have a choice. And I don't feel like drinking every morning. I don't feel like drinking ever, any mornings that I know of in recent history. But I like to look at that little picture because that's me. And I'm only this far away from a drink. And if I pick that drink up, I'm going to be that little man sitting in that little chair or in the 33rd Street again. And I don't want to be that guy. And so I finally, somewhere along the lines in June of 92, went to 33rd Street for the last time to date. And hopefully I'll, you know, what else can I knock on the tail of the joint? And all we really got to do is not drink. All we got to do is not drink. You can tell me how to stay out of jail. Just don't drink. And you're absolutely 100% right. I haven't been to jail. So come here. It was on a Monday night. Aubrey was in the coffee bar at the old club and said that, you know, I came in a typical attitude that I have, you know, thinking that, what do they call that about something about, we got this egomaniac living in the gutter or something. I don't know how the hell it goes. But I came in here thinking I'm something special, you know. I'm all that in a bag of chips. And I'm not even, I didn't have a bag of chips. I didn't have a place to put a bag of chips. But, you know, I'm coming in here and Aubrey says, you know, how you doing? I said, Scott, 31st, you know, I think I'm doing. I'm the same I'm always doing. Except this time I just don't want to drink anymore, Aubrey. Damn it. I mean, you know. Aubrey stopped drinking in 1963. I forget. I think it was August. I'm not sure, but I think it was August. And he says, well, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. I said, okay. All right, cool. He said, well, go to a meeting. I said, yeah. He said, no, there's one going on right now. Go to it. Because I was, you know, I will later. I'm going to go smoke a cigarette. See who's here. You know, all that. You know, I'm going to go. Let everybody know I'm here. I can't give a shit. Most people are like, Christ. So, I went to the little room across the street in the old building, was the step meeting, the 12 and 12. And that was my first meeting back. That's my sober meeting. That was my first meeting since, I haven't had a drink since then. I haven't had a drink since then. And pretty damn cool. So if you knew what Bill Oakley said to me, bring your dreams to Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that wholeheartedly. 6 months later, I was at the Buy the Book meeting. And one of the things that I had never done in sobriety before was this four-step thing that you guys talked about, this inventory. This cleaning up the wreckage of our past. And I was in the meeting, I think it was in November, I don't know, November, January, somewhere around there, end of the year, beginning of the year, I don't know, of 92, 93. 6, 7, 8 months sober, and I was in there and I was feeling, they were talking about the fourth step, and I know I hadn't done it, and obviously, you know, I've been bugging me a little bit about getting on it, and let's do a fifth step type thing, and I'm sober. You know, of course, sobriety's enough. You know, I started it right then. We think an alcoholic who says sobriety's enough is unthinking. Yes, sir. Nina says in the meeting, actually, I started crying in the meeting. It came around to me, and I was feeling bad, and I knew that it was just a matter of time before I picked up a drink, because that's what I always have done. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not going to get this four-step bullshit. You know, you guys can have it. And I'm, you know, and I said some other colorful words that I don't need to say tonight, you know. It's kind of neat, too. I'm kind of working on that. I mean, I'm still a newcomer. I mean, I've only been sober 18 years. I'm trying to clean up my language a little bit. Bill said we should do that in the first few months in sobriety. We should have all this shit cleaned up. And he did it. And he was an example. He was the walking, you know, he walked his talk. And he did what he said he was going to do. And he taught me that when you say you're going to do something, do it. And stuff like that. So, I'm crying, feeling bad, and know I'm going to drink. And Nina came up and gave me a big hug. I said, just go finish writing and get with Aubrey and do the damn thing. It's not a big deal. And for some reason, it stuck. And I did that. And we went to this, I called him up. We're going to set up and do the fifth step. And so it's pretty bad. So we got to go somewhere secret. Because, yeah, that's not a problem. Leave me a steak and shake on 1792 tomorrow morning. I did it at the steak and shake at the table. And I'm looking, you know, are these people going to, you know. And it's not a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. What was a big deal was that I felt better. I felt good. I mean, I don't know how much of it I felt better at that point, but I felt better. I felt good. I'm doing something now. I did something. I actually did a step. Good step. I mean, you could say you did step one. You say you did step two. Kind of say you did step three. Kind of measure that one a little bit. But step four, I had to write shit down. I did something. Step five, I really did something because I told somebody what some of the things that I'd done. Most of the things that I'd done. And I did, like the book says, I went after we left there, and I went by myself and I reflected for an hour or so and see what I was doing, what my life was like, what I really want to do. Is this what I want to be? Do I want to really be sober? Do I really want to have a good life? Hell yeah! But I just didn't know how to do it. That's how you do it. Look at this sorry son of a bitch. Here he is. He's sober. 18 years, baby. Today's, I'm going to pick up a medallion tonight. And I don't mean to sound and braggart a little bit, but you know what? I'm so proud that I'm getting that. And because I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't stay sober 15 minutes if there was a beer bottle in the house. So, when I say that with love and with, I will help anybody in this room, if I can, to do whatever. I will share what I did, you know, because I don't know how to do half this shit. I asked you guys how to do it. Then I went on and did the steps, and I want to share this one thing too, that when it came to step nine, there was a person that I owed money to that I really didn't think I owed money to. I think he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and yeah, some bitch, you know, I'm not paying him. So I didn't. So 7 years went by, I still ain't paid him. I'm paying that guy. I owe him shit, man. But 7 years later, guess what? He's still bugging me. So that's a problem, I'm thinking. I mean, I wasn't thinking of denim. Somebody would say, well, it's still bugging you. I think it might even have been Lenny back then. It's still bugging you a little bit, isn't it? Only when you bring it up. Oh, it's not bugging. It's not bugging me until you bring it up. Well, guess what? It was bugging me because it was inside, right? So the strangest thing happened, and there's a couple of strange things that happened, and I know everybody's saying, oh, that's a God thing, and you're probably right. So I just got like $1,500. I made a decision. Alright, I'll pay him. Do it, whatever. I'm tired of going into the hardware store and feeling, oh Christ, he's in there again. Dang it, I'm going to bump into him. He's going to remember. He never said a word, not one time ever. Probably didn't even remember me. Of course, you know how we are. Well, self-centered in the extreme. Everybody remembers me. That's something that better remember me. He didn't. I paid him. I got a check, came in the mail from the IRS. It was about $1,500 or so, right around there, you know. And I went down, called him up, said, hey, I want to pay you guys. I want to clear the slate table. And I was waiting for this. She goes, what we're going to do is we're not going to charge you interest, okay? Mail the check as long as we have the check by the end of the week. Pretty ungrateful. B.I.T. sir. I mailed a check. You know what? I mailed it because that's what I was told to do, and I bitched about it. I didn't do it without bitching. I didn't mail the check before I bitched and cried and moaned and groaned and said, that ungrateful, I shouldn't mail the check. I should do this. No, what you should do is do what you said you're going to do. Throw it in the bank, write a check, and mail it. And I did. This is where it gets really good. Check this out. When I went back into the hardware store, I didn't even think about that guy. I didn't even think whether he's in here or not. Didn't even cross my mind. It was gone. It was gone. Friggin' gone. So, we have that measuring thing inside of us that tells us when we do the right thing and when we do the wrong thing. And apparently I've been doing the wrong thing a lot of, you know, because I was hard-headed and I didn't want to do it. But then when it was gone, I knew I did it. So, if you feel like you might be a little slow at getting this thing, you feel like you might be going in and out, you don't have to give up on yourself. I gave up on myself a lot of times, and you guys would come and grab me, pull me up, give me a big hug, shake me a little bit. No coins fell out, though. I didn't have any. And I'd get, all right, I'd come back to the meeting. All right, I'll do that. Yeah, all right, I'll do it. So if your sponsor or somebody that maybe cares about you a little bit asks you to do something, you know, maybe they're asking you because they care about you. Maybe they're saying, hey, I haven't seen you in a meeting in a while. You going to meetings? Yeah. Meeting makers make it. And we can say all that stuff about, you know, it's not the meetings that keep you sober. It's this, it's that, it's the other. You know what? Maybe it is. Without the meetings, I'm drunk as Cooter Brown. I guarantee it. I didn't say it. I almost said it, though. All right, you know, so anyway, so I what else does the guy say? He comes up here, I share what it was like. It was the book says bear with me one moment. The book talks about my life, about page 34 for sure. The utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity of the wish. That was my drinking. The last line in the step 1, 12 and 12 says, we become willing to do anything to lift the merciless obsession from us. So maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's what I did. I don't know. But I believe when they say, the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that happened to me. And then, so after I did that, somewhere else in the big book it says, we were rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence that we couldn't even dream. That, and I know I misquoted it, so please, but I like it. And I am there. I am in that fourth dimension of existence that I haven't even imagined before. And again, my sobriety is second to nothing in this room. It's the absolute most important thing in my life, and I hope you feel the same way about your sobriety. I did something for my sobriety today. What was it? Well, I can tell you without a doubt, I got on my knees and asked God to keep me sober. What's God? Who knows? But I can tell you that God's an acronym for good orderly direction. That much I do know. I don't know what it is, where it comes from, or how it works. But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is an acronym for good orderly direction. And you know what else I believe? I believe that Angel believes. And that's enough. And that's what Aubrey told me. He says, do you believe I believe? I said, well, yeah. He said, you've been sober a long time. Because that's enough, mister. Thank you very much for my sobriety.